Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. This episode, we have my friend Neil Johnny. Neil wielded Porsche's incredible, absolutely unfiltered Porsche 919 Hybrid. It's LMP1 championship-winning car, Le Mans-winning car, with all the restrictions taken off. Everything that held it back in its World Endurance Championship form and during its triple threat victories at Le Mans. Neil just set the outright lap record of a 141.7 around Spa-Francorchamps in this, eclipsing Lewis Hamilton's pole from the 2017 Formula One race of a 142.5, almost three quarters of a second faster, believe it or not. And having read about it, having seen Porsche's press release, I said, hey, I want to talk to our man Neil and get the insights of what it was like to actually wield this more than 1,000 horsepower monster. And so not only did we do that, we also started to get some numbers from Neil about the G-forces he was experiencing, the speeds he was experiencing, and also had him talk us around a lap. And then we closed with him just describing this, because this really is turning the page back to an era where unfiltered, unregulated cars were the norm. Can-Am, even portions of the IMSA GTP era, where there was a rule book, but it was very thin. So magical, magical stuff from Neil. He's just a lovely guy, by the way. A really fun, warm character. Swiss of Indian descent, one of my favorite accents in all of motor racing. So I hope you enjoy Neil, and really, to me, I believe the first real in-depth insight of what it was like setting this lap record. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, also on Podbean, and on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. Would definitely, definitely urge you to subscribe, to share, to do whatever you can in our little podcast here presented by Cooper Tires. All right, off we go with Neil Johnny.
So Neil, you're the author of one of the coolest things I have seen in motor racing in a while, and it's when you take an amazing machine like the Porsche 919 Hybrid, and our good friends at Porsche Motorsports say, well, what would the ultimate version of this car do around a racetrack? You coming off of just setting the outright lap record at Spa, let's maybe go back to the beginning and tell me about when you first heard about these ambitions from Porsche to go and find the ultimate performance of the 919 Hybrid. No restrictions. I'm guessing there was a huge smile on your face.
Yeah, definitely. This came up, you know, not actually that early. I mean, it came up in the definitely only in the second half of the season that there could be something like a tribute tour done. And it was actually a short call for the engineers. You know, the car wasn't really ready. We didn't run the car before with everything on, like the full aero and so on. It was not like we tested it in Weissach forever. This our real first track test to see, you know, if things actually work was Spa.
No pressure.
That makes it even more impressive of what the engineers have done to me. How they managed, you know, to produce a car and bring it directly to the racetrack and we go and beat the lap record. Or go 12 seconds quicker. I mean, the lap record was the second thing, but going 12 seconds quicker, because ultimately the chassis is our race chassis, how we ended at Bahrain.
Mm.
The engine is the same. The hybrid, the electrical engine, is the same. This is all the same parts. So the chassis, everything is the same. The only thing they changed is the nose, the front nose. They took the lights out and made it a little bit longer. The main floor stayed the same. And then the tail, obviously with the wing, you know, they had a DRS. That changed. But, you know, otherwise, in terms of hardware, they didn't change that much. I mean, power-wise, we didn't change anything. Chassis is same. So it's really just basically the 919 hybrid core, but pimped. Basically, not pimped, but pimped up.
Yeah.
And no power restrictions like we have in WEC, you know, with fuel flow, the energy,
yep.
recuperation. These are all things which were gone then. And just more downforce, which we were also restricted with. And so from that point of view, you know, the engineers did it in a few months, a couple of months, but they didn't have a year time, maximum half a year, to do this and bring the car to track. And once, the first time I drove it was in Weissach with full power, and I thought, ooh, okay, that is definitely the quickest thing I've driven so far in acceleration. Because I've driven the V10 engines in F1
yeah.
and they pull. But man, this thing with full engine power, full hybrid power, 1,160 horsepower, they say.
Well,
it doesn't stop, no?
And that,
it's not
and
like it stops at some stage. It stops when you lift the foot off the gas, off the throttle.
And that's the thing, Neil, that I appreciated, because they picked the perfect guy for this. Because having seen you in Champ Car in 2007, I mean, those were very impressive cars. Having seen you, you know, with your Formula One role, having seen you at Le Mans many times, whether it's, you know, just destroying, you know, laps and lap records there. I mean, they picked the right guy to go out and try and extract the maximum from this car. Was that part of the challenge that you enjoyed as well? And I ask that because, you know, not saying nothing negative about some of your, you know, teammates or other folks within, you know, the Porsche family or any other manufacturer's family, but we always know there's one or two guys you want in the craziest car to go for pole, to go for the lap record. There are others who, you know, perform brilliantly in their role as part of a driver rotation, but, mm-hmm. you know, there's a couple we look to like you to say, all right, Neil, go get it. Is that part of the attraction for you as well with this project?
Well, clearly, when they told me, Neil, you are the designated driver to do this, I was very happy I get this chance. But I also knew there is kind of, you know, it's not like we went there and we desperately wanted to break that lap record. We wanted to see how quick that car goes and showcase how quick that car can go. But, you know, in the back head, you still calculate, yeah, it could work out. It could work out, but it will be tight. I mean, you always knew it will be not just, like, easy, you know, it will be tight. So, as a driver, you will have to take risks. And you will have to go to the limit. And Spa at the limit, you know, it's still not a boys' track. You know, Rouge at 307... minimum speed was 307 in Eau Rouge, and I had laterally in Eau Rouge, I had laterally over 5G peak, and vertically because of the compression over 4G.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, you feel it. I mean, it's physical. It was also physical, but it was basically, to be honest, it had everything I expect from a race car. Power, grip, and it's physically hard and mentally hard, because the car is so quick and you can take such amazing speed in the corner that you as a person, you as a driver, you are nearly the limit, you know?
Yeah.
It's you who have to make an effort to go quick. Normally you drive a car and you always overdrive, it's too quick in, too slow out, you know, all these classical things, because you think like, fuck, it should go quicker.
Of course.
Need more grip. But with this car, it was opposite. It was like, okay, I can still go quicker in this corner.
That's insane. So before
it was the dream to get the chance to drive that car.
Well, I want to talk our way around the track here in a moment. But before we get to some of the, you know, the craziness you would have experienced knocking out, you know, the fast lap, let's talk a little bit about developing the car while you were there. I mean, how much time did you have working with the engineers, obviously doing, you know, short runs, in and outs and whatnot to try and tweak the setup and such? I mean, obviously having tested the car at Weissach, with the team having done a lot, I'm sure, plenty of simulation of the Spa circuit, I'm guessing the car was pretty close the moment you rolled out, but I'm curious, at least for those exploratory laps, Did you find anything setup-wise, arrow-wise, where you came back and said, hey, maybe we need a little more of this or a little less of that?
Yeah, it was me and Timo who did the most work on the simulator, and because Timo will be also driving that car
yeah.
at some other venues. So it was me and Timo doing the most of the work, and Timo was also there to drive the car. And then we started on day one, obviously trying to first beat our own pole lap from the previous year, which I did at a 153.9, I think, 53.9 or 53.7, can't remember, 53.7 or 53.9. And, you know, we wanted to go at it step by step because, as I said, we've never tried that car in that configuration on a racetrack like that, and you don't want to go at 300 through a rouge and then you realize the load is so high
that
the tire blows up, because the tires, Michelin did a great job, you know, they had to make sure that we're always on the safe side with the tires, because you don't want a tire blow up, because that would be a big one. And so we had to run a lot higher pressures than usual just to be also on the safe side.
Of course.
So that was already, let's say, one thing we just did for safety. We know this is where step by step, you have to find out how are the loads on the car, the tires, is there aero bouncing? Because, you know, in simulation you can do a lot, but suddenly with a different changed aero, if you turn in Blanchimont at 330 flat, Blanchimont, that left-hander, you know, the car has different loads on tires and aero bouncing. So, you know, you needed to, all these things we did really step by step. And, you know, it was pure joy those 3 days because, you know, working, I've realized it again, because I've done this one Formula E race and I've seen again with, again, other teams, just how methodical Porsche as a team approach this test. It was like a test, was like a test and a race weekend in one.
Mm.
You know, all the people there, it was step by step test program, step by step check everything, loads, tires, aero, gearbox, engine, how much energy can we recuperate, where is it best to deploy, because now obviously we have full boost all the time. Is it better to deploy lower? Now we had to adjust the traction control because we had more power.
I bet.
We had to check the brake coolings because now, obviously, with more aero, you can brake a lot later and harder. But then again, we arrived quicker. Then, for example, the DRS. Where do we open the DRS? Where do we close it? Well, where is it, makes it sense to close? We ended up deciding driving through a rouge with open DRS, and because it
did that take some convincing, Neil? Did that take some convincing? Going, wait a minute, you want me to blow through a rouge at maximum low drag on the rear wing? I mean, that at least I realize, you know, our respective driving talents are slightly different, but at least for me, that would have taken a lot of negotiating. Like, are you serious? Do you guys just not like me? Are you trying to get rid of me? There's no way I would do that.
Well,
but
clearly, the first thought you have, like, man, you sure that works? And then they, you know, how the engineers are, because the engineer don't know how it feels to go through a corner at 300 kph with 4.5 or 5 G's. No, they just say, well, computer says it's okay. So you do ask them, but you know, that's the thing. What I have developed over those 4 or 5 years with Porsche, I knew if they tell me we should be able, from the loads it's better for the car, you will have to lift, but going at full aero it will be less quick because we'll just have too much drag, so it's better to lift and find the limit, you know. And it's not more dangerous, it's actually more safe because we have less load on the car. There I just trust Porsche, and because, you know, those guys, you know, they really think about everything. And that's what was so nice with the professional team over those 3 days, just to experience that again. Because in the end, you need to have also trust. because going in a car which is modified 12 seconds quicker and getting four times the lap over 5 G's laterally and going at those speeds, you need to know that you don't have a suspension break off, a tire blow up, or anything. But there, yeah, Porsche did their work, and I knew they did it, and that's why I never even had to think that, oh yeah, that could be dangerous. I never thought I had full trust, you know, in them.
That's phenomenal. I mean, granted, everything you're describing, Neil, is the way things should work within a proper team where you trust them.
Yeah, but
again,
believe me, oh, that's not that common.
Yeah, we've had conversations about where, obviously not Porsche, but with other teams where, the dynamic isn't right. Well, let's talk through a lap if we can, or, you know, your record lap. I mean, you're coming out of the chicane, flying past start finish, breaking into La Source. I know you're already accustomed to that 1100 plus horsepower, you know, pinning your helmet into the headrest, but what's it like starting a lap here, powering out of La Source? That must go by pretty quickly by the time you're coming up on Eau Rouge.
As I explained, you know, we had tests day one, day two, where Timo and I shared car, and day two, Andre did a few laps also. Then we said, okay, day three, morning, that's our time. We want to really try have a go at it now. So I went first out, and then it was already a good lap time. And my second set, we already, basically, I went through La Source, and I saw 2.5 tenths up.
Wow.
Already after La Source. So I knew, okay, that's not bad. Then up Eau Rouge, it was nearly flat. Nearly, just this little pussy lift, we can call it.
And I mean, is the car stable the whole time, or is it moving at all on you?
It was pumping on the rear. I mean, there's this good YouTube video. I don't know if you saw it. One very good YouTube video. From the morning when we actually did the lap record, it's some private guy, and it's there are two, and one is a good one. You can see it's not sunny, because it was not sunny the day we did the lap record. Another one, other video, it's sunny, so that's not when we tried. And there, the first video is how I'm coming up Eau Rouge, and you see how the rear is pumping. So you know, you will still, you have to still feel a little bit into it. Through Eau Rouge up, and I saw, okay, I gained another 1.5 tenths.
What are you looking at for VMAX, Neil, as you're getting towards the end of the straight heading towards Lacombe?
Well, in my quickest lap, it was 3:59, but I know in other laps we had nearly 3:64, 3:65. End of the straight, 3:65, I think, or 3:67, somewhere there. It was direct, it was top speed, but the wind changed then, so we had a bit of headwind, so that brought me just down to 3:59 on my quickest lap.
Jeez, that's
No, 3:65 or 3:67.
I mean, that's almost 227 miles an hour, which is,
yeah.
You know, we're talking, that's average lap speed, good average lap speed at the Indy 500. And, you're cranking that in a straight line, heading into braking for Lacombe. I mean, Lacombe is always, it doesn't seem like it might be an important part of the lap, but you know, if you overcharge that corner, you can, you know, the entry right-hander, you can certainly lose a lot and hurt yourself the rest. I mean, how do you balance coming off of almost 227 miles an hour, Neil, to, you know, acing that right-left-right?
Lacombe was always a very difficult corner because, strange enough, in the morning, because the air is cooler and you have more air density, you have more downforce, no, than when it's warmer. So in the morning, on that straight line, I started getting aero bouncing, which I never had on the days before.
Really?
Yeah, a bit of bouncing on the front axle. So it didn't make braking easier. But strange enough, in the afternoon it's gone. It was just in the morning.
Huh.
So it has to do with the air, you know? Because yeah. In the morning the air is different.
Yeah, I wonder if the center of pressure had moved forward just too much to the point to where you're starting to get that porpoising effect. Interesting.
Yeah, it was just an effect which we only saw in the morning and not in the afternoon. That I had. And then, you know, braking, you brake after the 100-meter board still. You brake with that amount of downforce, you just hammer into the brakes. And mega deceleration. You already have to push your neck to the back before you start braking, because otherwise you know it will go forward.
Yeah, you're going to smack your head on the steering wheel if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like good old Formula One days, you know, with the deceleration.
How crazy. So you power out of Lake Home, heading downhill, and then it's right.
You ever stood in Lake Home at left, right?
I have not. I've seen it from many angles.
It's quite tight, actually, the corner. It's quite tight. It's not that big, open. But I basically turn in fifth gear. that's what I thought the first thing. Like, fuck, man, fifth gear in here.
That is...
And even fourth or fifth, you know, you can...
That is insane. This whole lap's insane, but I mean, this is like crazy insane.
So what I had to focus is that right-hander. I just had to, it was difficult to brake because of the bouncing I turn in. And then basically I wanted to place, because I knew with the grip of the tire for the first lap, the downforce, I want to be coming on throttle and not lifting anymore for the rest, for the left and the right. And because then just use the whole power and grip and everything. And basically that worked out more or less. It had like 5% lift for those two corners.
Okay. I mean, I'm starting to run out of adjectives here to describe how insane this is. So you are doing ridiculous speeds in higher gears than most people would ever expect to power through Lake Home. For me, at least, this is where my favorite part of the lap comes, because, you know, you start heading back downhill towards turn 10, right-hander, you know, long complex there. What is the balance like there, Neil? Because it's certainly a place where you're downhill. It's not a heavily cambered corner. So
the most difficult corner for us. And I think that was also the corner we lost the most lap time compared to a Formula One car. Because, you know, we are more than 100 kilos heavier than an F1 car still with this car. I think, I don't know exactly how much, but kind of quite a bit over 100 kilos. And going down there, downhill, the corner is off camber. So it falls off towards the exit. And there was the corner you couldn't rely too much on aero. You had to rely on just mechanical grip. And there, to get around, I suffered a bit with understeer and just to rotate the car. But there, we worked with our brake-by-wire also. You know, we had some torque vectoring.
Interesting.
So we help the car rotate a little bit via our brake-by-wire system.
Fascinating.
Because our car has front and rear brake wires, so basically like a rally car does.
Yep.
In the good old rally days, basically that's what we did.
Wow. So you're trying to corral this understeer in the corner itself. If anything, is trying to, the nature of the turn is trying to throw you off the track. So you have gotten through there. Now starts for me the really fun part, where you're accelerating, setting up for the left hander at turn 11. Then blasting downhill, saying your prayers before you get to Pujon. What kind of speed are you building?
Well, you head to Pujon, and then obviously you always check your delta, and then you see you're up already. I saw, I think, 8 or 9 tenths up now.
Jeez.
I was like, okay, this can be a hammer lap now. then I knew, okay, now I need to risk a little bit more in Pujon than on other laps to get the little extra. Pujon we did at 260 kph more or less, the left-hander, in sixth gear, both over 5 Gs.
And what is that like, Neil, for those who don't drive race cars but obviously can appreciate? I mean, we've seen Formula One cars blast through Pujon for many years. We've seen, you know, WEC, whether it's prototypes or GT cars. It's always a fast corner, and, you know, they've added in adequate runoff in recent years. But, I mean, it's a place where you need massive balls, massive commitment to maximize that corner. What's it like?
Turning is deciding it.
And what is it like in this machine? Yeah, I mean, I can't. This to me has to be something where you're saying, "All right, I'm going maximum attack." But knowing you, I'm guessing there's also a kind of a smile going on because you're like, "Okay, if I get this right, this is going to be awesome."
Exactly. Basically, I knew if I brake. You know, you pitch the car, you lose aero platform. So it's better to maybe lift a little earlier, but stabilize the car, and then you don't have to brake to turn in, and then just carry more minimum speed this way. But I was just thinking about that then for that corner.
So as you're blasting through Pujon, what is your neck telling you? Because your neck is, you know, I'm sure your neck's talking, your body is, you know, trying to get thrown out of the right side of the car. I mean, I know that you obviously felt many Gs in other places on the lap, but I mean, that just seems like a place where the sustained speed and sustained Gs must be something where you're going, ooh, this is pretty crazy.
Definitely. But, you know, to me, it felt super nice. Finally, you turn in a corner and think like, oh shit, the car's still going. But like, you feel it, like you're like, oh fuck, man, I go far now. It's getting physical.
So you're blasting through Pujon. You're heading into the, I don't know if I want to call it Mickey Mouse, but it there aren't many spots at Spa that you would say are kind of normal. But the turn 13, 14, 15 seems like a, you know, fairly straightforward section. What's going on there for you? I mean, what is your delta telling you as well about lap time?
Well, you have the right left. You have the right left-hander. You have to make sure. The one thing I always told myself, because the car had so much grip, I knew I have to carry speed into that corner. And not try to, I don't have to be scared about the understeer. Just drive it in. And if it understeers a little bit, I can still correct it. But basically, hammer it in. You have to tell yourself, don't brake too early, hammer it in. That's all I told myself going into the next into that complex.
Wow. So now you're getting ready to set up for another incredibly important corner, that being Stavelo, because what you do there, you know, as you well know, you're either going to help yourself through a really long blast heading through Blanchimont up to the chicane and to you know, complete the lap. What are you feeling with the car, and what are you seeing as you're powering
out of
Stavelo?
Like that right hander, no?
Yeah. Yeah, the right.
So my delta was now quite a bit up, so I knew, okay, now I just have to bring it home somehow. And we manage it. And this corner, this last right hander though, is the one which afterwards mega long straight follows until bus stop, no?
Yep.
So you know, if you mess that one up, you're done. But if you go too conservative, you can lose also a lot of time because your minimum speed is too low and you will never catch up anymore. So in that lap there, I also took a certain risk because I just didn't shift down. I stayed in fifth gear as well. And tried just to by that, carry the maximum minimum speed I could through there.
And is the car dancing on you at all? Yeah, is it dancing? Is the car dancing on you at all, or what's it doing? Because, you know, corner exit is where you give up.
On entry, it obviously had some movement. But I managed to get good on throttle, and then I knew it's all flat. It's all flat, flat, flat. But it was not easy flat, because, you know, even after that right hand, they have that right kink.
Yeah.
Which is flat, but it's not easy, because it's the car, I mean, is pushing with 1,160 horsepower through that corner. If you turn in a little too early, you're done. If you turn in too late, you're done. So it just, the one thing which I learned with that car is you have to be precise. If you're not precise, you're done. But I guess that's how it's on an oval. Never driven an oval, but I guess that's how it is.
Yeah, well, the margin of error, to your point, you have to be so critically precise, but with insane horsepower, and also, you know, just the speeds that things are happening, that are what you're processing in front of you at this point is coming so quickly. I mean, that's yet another part of you know, what makes all of this. And you,
well, the difficult part there was, you know, the boost deployment from the front axle, because it's a four-wheel drive. But if you have too much front, the front started to understeer off. Power understeer, basically, because the front is just too much power. So that's also there we have to work quite a bit, you know. And that's also driver dependent. Some like it a bit more like this, some like it to have a little bit less torquey, you know. It's all things you can adjust, and
sure,
that's what we have to do just to be going flat through there.
So you get a monster run onto this long straight. What are you doing on this straight, knowing that your lap is, you know, you're getting close to the end of your lap? Are you looking, you know, are you looking at any of your, any of the info on your dash and such? Or are you just, you know, eyes fixed on the road, trying to, you know, maximize your lap?
To be honest, during this lap, all I had time to think about was look sometimes onto my dash for the delta lap time. But otherwise, it's, you have to have that lap way prepared before in your head.
Mm.
Because when you approach a corner, it's too late to think.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be automated what you want to do. So I knew already I'm going to take that fifth gear. I told my head already before what I'm going to do.
That's so crazy. So you're sailing along this long straight, Neil, and you know, you're seeing your speed climb. Do you recall what you reached in terms of a VMAX before you got into the braking zone?
Well, then there's Blanchimont, not the famous right left-hander.
Yeah.
Blanchimont is, I mean, it's a real corner. I don't know how many degrees, but it's still quite a corner, left-hander. And minimum speed through there was 333 kph. So that's, yeah, over
207 miles an hour.
207 miles per hour through the left-hander. And I knew this one, I have to stay flat and I have to make sure I turn in correctly, because if I hit the curb on the exit too much, the car's going to bounce. And
yeah,
then I have also an issue. So then that worked. And then, yeah, last corner. You have this huge bump entering into Pop Dog, so you have to try and avoid that one and hammer the brakes, basically. But there, I have to say, I think maybe, I mean, I was on the limit, because when I hit the brakes, I really bottomed out over that bump, but I just managed to turn in there. So, but I also didn't want to overdo it in the last corner. I would have cried otherwise.
I mean, was that the only
team as well?
Was that the only place where you could have almost overcooked it? I mean, were there any other sections on that lap where you're like, "Ooh, that was close"?
No, the last corner, I didn't. I could have maybe gotten through there maybe half a tenth quicker by braking, half a tenth, maybe. I don't know, but, you know, because you approach that corner, you will not put 110% effort in that corner anymore. and you think you're in target, on target, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you have to start being smart.
So you rocket out of the chicane, Neil, and you know, cross the timing stripe. What happens after that? Do you push for another lap, or do you know, was that something where you you pitted at the end of the lap?
I knew I did it, and then I mean, you know, it was maximum, and the tires, it's been historically like that also with WEC. We have one lap, the tire. It's the first time lap. Afterwards, yeah, you can get close, but you cannot go quicker anymore.
Jeez.
It's been always like that with us in WEC. We've never done... The first lap was always the quickest.
So two questions. What was the mental release like once you completed the lap? Because it sounds like... You know, although you're, you know, this is something you live for, so I'm not, you know, this is something you're perfectly designed for, but I have to imagine there was a big exhale or something like, oh, Jesus, that was crazy and amazing. And also, what was the reaction from the team, whether it was over the radio or when you pitted, because, you know, you had just achieved something pretty amazing, my man.
Well, you know, for us, you know, we think that Formula One has a chance to go quicker than us again. We knew also we could go into the 40s if circumstances would be completely correct, but we didn't have, you know, the weather was not the best and we had certain things because the car basically rolled out of Weissach and we went to drive there. No, so we knew we had maybe a bit more potential, but there that was the maximum we could do. And when I came over the line, I knew, okay, I mean, from now on, yeah, there is not a lot we can do more. And it felt amazing. I mean, you know, going through Blanchimont at 300, over 330, through a Rouge 307, you know, you feel it. You feel it. And you feel the adrenaline because it's just pure joy having a car with that much power, that much grip, and then you manage to pull off a lap which is 12 seconds quicker than we've ever gone in that car around that track. And on the other hand, it's a new lap record. I mean, it's just everything coming together. But I think it was more, I think for everyone it was a happiness that we managed to beat the lap record, but even more is that we actually went 12 seconds quicker with the same car, more or less. I mean, the chassis was the same, engines are the same. You know, it's not like we could change the chassis. If we could change the chassis, we would have built most probably something like Audi with a higher nose and it would have been having more potential. But what we've done is just modified our car, which we ran the last 3 years. And I think that's what the big relief for everyone was. It's like, man, we managed it. We came here with the hope to beat the lap record, and we've actually done it. But it was just a hope. It was, So I think it was everything together. But I think for me as a driver, it was more the joy, like experiencing those forces, that speed, and, you know, mental jumps you have to do because you still have to tell yourself, okay, this one you can take it flat, this one little lift only, this corner fifth gear. You know, you have to tell yourself first things like that because naturally you will never do it.
No, yeah.
You think like, oh, well, that's not possible. Yeah, not possible. Never worked in history. Never worked for myself before in my career. So you have to take a complete different approach, and that was for me a fun part. That's what the joy came from.
Your
challenge,
your body's fight or flight response is what you have to overcome, because some of the things that you know you have to go do just defy what your brain is telling you makes sense.
Yeah, limits newly defined.
The other thing, Neil, I'm sure you appreciated, knowing how many amazing cars you've driven throughout your career, was seeing the true potential of the car shown. You know, just about every racing series on the planet, even Formula One, has some sort of restriction. You know, F1 has fuel flow restriction, which I've forgotten. Someone on social media kindly reminded me. You know, just about every series has either a little bit of regulation holding the car back. Then there are other series we know of where there's, you know, the road cars in GT, for example. Many of the road cars have more power than the race car. So, you know, we're heavily restricted. I'm guessing you also had an appreciation for what it was like to go out almost old, you know, like Can-Am era or IMSA GTP or something, where it was like, okay, this is as awesome as we can make this car. Go attack, no rules, no restrictions. I know you had to love that part too.
It's the dream of everyone, no? It's the dream of everyone. The limit, the no boundary car, basically. No limits. What can you do with it? If we can go racing like that, that's a complete different question, you know, if that makes sense. But to drive, it's clearly, I mean, I think I'm thankful Porsche had that idea, and I'm thankful they pulled it through, because that was a mega experience, and that was, you know, what you, the ride on the bullet, basically. It's when you watch MotoGP, you have that feeling always, man, they're riding a bullet, it's man against machine. And here, that's what it felt like for me, for the first time, you know, it's like, really, man against machine, battling. You have to battle the machine, basically.
And that was Porsche's Neil Johnny taking us inside his just mesmerizing run at Spa. There are more lap record runs coming up here. Won't necessarily get into who I think it might be and where it might be, but I do know of a famous, world-famous German circuit that might be on their radar. Definitely ripe for going for the outright lap record there. And yeah, cannot wait to see this Porsche 919 tribute tour continue. Hashtag tribute, and see what other lap records they can knock down. Also be interesting to see as Formula One gets around to some of these circuits. Very likely that the cars this year, even faster, will knock off the new time set by the Porsche team. So could this be a fun back and forth in the years to come? Who knows? But I'm so glad that they're doing it, because honestly, motor racing needs more of this. Just pure ideas. Go do it. Forget the rule book. You know, really just bandits. Just true motor racing banditry, where they go out, have an idea, want to just destroy lap records, and do it with this almighty machine that is at the cutting edge of technology. There's nothing in Formula One that comes close to this Porsche 919 hybrid. It didn't when the car was in full WEC rule and restricted mode, and now with everything taken off, the shackles removed, there is definitely no motor racing vehicle on planet Earth that can measure up to the technical excellence, the pure innovation, and then also I think the driving requirements of listening to Neil and what it was like to hold on for dear life and also have to tap into faith to pull off the lap that he did here at Spa. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is a Marshall Pruitt podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.